නමුතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමුතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමුතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So today we hope to start a new sutta. Last week actually we have finished discussing what we call Salayatanika, Maha Salayatanika Sutta, where Buddha has given a detailed composition of six sense bases. What happens if we are not protecting them, and what happens if we are protecting them, and what are the benefits, and how one can develop vipassana so that the bodhipakkhiya dhammas would be developed. So that kind of information were there in that Maha Salayatanika Sutta. And today I hope to start a new sutta which is available in the Samyutta Nikaya Khandavagga. So this is called Haliddhakani Sutta or Haliddhikani Sutta. That is one venerable, that is called Venerable Mahakacchana, who is well known for his ability to explain things. So whenever there is a difficult dhamma, say teaching, then monks are going to meet Venerable Mahakacchana, and he is capable of explaining that in simple terms so that others can understand. So therefore Buddha also has given him a title where he is the foremost in that sort of monks who are capable of explaining Dhamma to the others. And we can say Venerable Mahakacchana and this what you call the householder Haliddhakani seems to have a good relationship, and it seems that Haliddhakani often visit Venerable Mahakacchana, and he asks various questions. And interestingly, the Attakavagga of Sutta Nipata is very very interesting. Suttas are included, and there are many monks sometimes discussing them. Either Attakavagga or either Parayanavagga available in the Sutta Nipata are very rich areas where Buddha has given very brief but very profound teachings during the first half of his life. You know, during the first 20 years particularly. So that is typically we call as the early Buddhist teachings also, we can say. And there Buddha has given some very brief teachings, and again they are to the point, but unfortunately we can't immediately understand them. They are so profound, and interestingly they are targeted or oriented towards people who are more talented and who are with less dust. And you know, in the Sutta Nipata there is no detail or no mention about Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami. But immediately what is available is the Arahant. So most of the suttas are addressing to an Arahant or targeting an Arahant. So only when we are coming to later half of the Buddha's life, that is say Majjhima Nikaya, Digha Nikaya and all these things, that is where some information is available with respect to the other attainments. So it seems like during the first half of the Buddha's life, the people he encountered are quite capable and they are with lot of parami, and as a result of that Buddha directly has given them very brief teaching, and they were able to understand them in detail, and as a result of that they are able to practice accordingly and then realize the arhanthood. So later, by the way, as the sasana growing, many people were joining and all of them are not at the same level, so Buddha has to explain more in detail. So as a result of that, the long discourses were coming to the picture. Now later anyway, so it can't understand whether this at this particular time whether the Buddha is alive or not, because at this time Venerable Mahakacchana was dwelling in Avanti, and it's called Mount Papatha at Kuraragraha. So that is another place, and we are in Avanti area. And the householder Halitha Khani is approaching Venerable Mahakachana. Now he is asking a question which is available in the Magandhya Sutta of Attakavagga. So this is very much like a very interesting phenomena where even a householder know what Buddha has taught in the Attakavagga. In a householder also know that what is available in the Sutta Nipata in general. So that means Sutta Nipata is a very, very interesting area. Most of the Dhamma followers or most of the people who are more interested in deeper teachings of the Buddha seems to have explored. And here the situation is Halitha Khani didn't understand what Buddha has taught there. One particular gatha, one particular verse he is now referring to get a better explanation from Venerable Mahakachana. So the verse says, Okang pahaya aniketa sari, gami akubbang muni santavani, kamehi ritto apurakkarano, katangna vigaiha janena kairati. So that is the verse available in the Magandhya Sutta of Sutta Nipata Attakavagga. And this Halitha Khani, the householder Halitha Khani, couldn't understand the meaning of that. So Bhikkhu Bodhi immediately has given the translation here. Okam pahaya aniketa sari, having left home to roam without a boat. Game akubbang muni santavani, in the village the sage is intimate with no one or none. Kamehi ritto apurakkarano, rid of sensual pleasures without expectations. Kathang na viggaiha janena kairati, he would not engage people in dispute. Now even though we can get this English translation, we also can't understand what Buddha really meant from that. So that is why there may be a kind of a slight understanding at the level of the Halitha Khani, but he needs to get a better understanding, a detailed understanding, what exactly Buddha meant in this verse. So he is approaching Venerable Mahakachana, and now he is asking the question, how, Venerable Sir, should the meaning of this stated by the Blessed One in brief be understood in detail? Halitha Khani directly asks a detailed exposition from Venerable Mahakachana. Now Venerable Kachana is going to explain it. Now, what is Okang and what is Niketa? So those are the terms that he is explaining. Now he is going to explain the form element householder is the home of consciousness. One whose consciousness is shackled by lust for the form element is called one who roams about in a home. So that is the oka. Rupa dhatu ko gahapati vinyanasa oko. Oko is a house. Oko is, we can say, a kind of an abode. The Pali term oka refers to a home. So the idea here is vinyana associates a home in that sense. The consciousness associates a home. And when it is associating a home, it is called, which is bound, which is attached. Now that association happens because of kind of an attachment, kind of an upadan, due to some sort of a desire, some sort of a lust. Now for the consciousness, therefore, the form element is a house. And when someone's consciousness is shackled by lust and shackled by all the defilements, then his consciousness could associate this form element. Then he is called roams about in the home, in a home. Okasari. So that in that sense, that person's consciousness is called okasari. Now similarly, a feeling also can be a home for the consciousness. Then again, his consciousness is called okasari, one who is associating an abode. roams about in a home. Similarly, the perception also an area where the consciousness can associate, can establish, can roam around and associate. Then it is called again okasari. Similarly, the volitional formations element is the home of consciousness. One whose consciousness is shackled by lust for the volitional formations element is called one who roams about in a home. It is in such a way that one roams about in a home. Now we can say, so this may be the reason now, I mean, internally the consciousness always want to associate a home. So externally we as human beings can see that we need a home to associate. We need someone to associate. We need a wife, we need a husband, we need children, we need a house, we need a say a car, we need friends. Every time we need an association, every time we need some sort of an involvement, kind of an engagement. Now that is the outer representation, but when we go deeply to inside, the operation happens at the level of consciousness, where consciousness wants to associate. Consciousness needs sort of a home. That home could be form, that home could be feelings, that home could be perceptions, that home could be mental formations. Now some similar explanation is available in the Upaya Sutta, if you can remember. That is also in the Kanda Samyutta, where Buddha mentioned Rupa Upayangva Bhikkave Vinyanam Tittamanam Tittaya Rupa Rammanam Rupa Patittham Nandupa Sechanam Buddhing Virulhing Vepullang Apajjayi. Now what happens when consciousness go and associate the form? There Buddha give a more detailed explanation. There Buddha mentioned by associating form, the consciousness finds a footing. Vinyana tittamanam tittaya. Now if it wants to properly establish, if it wants to properly ground, then he is associating form element. Rupa Ramana. So that is the object of his attention. The consciousness object is the form in that sense. Rupa Patittham. On the form it is now established. Nandupa Sechana. Now as a result of that, kind of a delight is also there. Now that is why consciousness is being tempted to associate. It is not just because it's a kind of a dry association. Some sort of a delight is also generated when it is associating, when it is attached to the form. Some sort of a delight coming through the lust. It's a kind of a lustful delight. Nandi, Nandi Raga Sahagata. Now that is the term used for the quality of tanha, craving. So when craving is being felt, so we can say some sort of delight is there. It's a lustful delight. It's not a kind of a kind of dispassionate type of delight, but it's a very passionate kind of delight. The delight comes through the passion. Delights come through mixed with lust. Nandupa Sechana. Buddhing. That means the mind, the consciousness become more and more grown. At the beginning, it is simply maybe at the very subtle level or very minute level. But now, once it is well established and acquiring object or the form as an object and slowly establishing itself, now it is growing slowly. Buddhing, virulhing. So that means it's further growing. It's becoming more and more established. Vepullanga Pajjaya. So it can become now highly grown and completed. And it's very much like, say, you are throwing a seed to a very fertile ground. So when the seed is thrown to a fertile ground, suppose there is enough water available, the moisture available, and the field is also quite rich with fertile. And what happens next is now a little sapling comes out and it further absorbs the fertilizer, further absorbs water, And again it is growing. It gets the sunlight, the breeze, the air, everything. And slowly it's further growing. So likewise, it can become a plant and it can later become a huge tree. Same thing happens very quickly, very, very quickly in our mind. When consciousness found a footing on a form, that is where it is slowly growing, slowly establishing, slowly deeply rooted, and then ultimately it become well established. Now it is prepared its home very beautifully. Now it's there is no escape like. It's well associated by a home. It has a home now. Now we can say, now say for example, while you are traveling by a car or traveling by a bus, say you see someone beautiful. So since, or we'll say that you see someone that you have known, but you haven't seen him, you haven't met him for a long time, now immediately you understood, oh, this is my friend. Now slowly the mind further start looking forward, looking in front, and further eyes are very much focused to him, and further details are being captured. Now you remember all the past events. Now actually when it is being initiated through the form aggregate, all the other aggregates are also quite supporting. Now they also come to the picture, and that establishment of the consciousness is very much like putting many, many roots. It is not a single root. So it may be the root of the form at the beginning the mind have understood or the consciousness has established, but as it comes growing, there are many roots. It may be growing through the form root, it may be growing through the, say, the feelings root, perceptions root, formations root. So likewise, we can say all different fertilizer, all different necessary nutrition is now being fed. So similarly, when we are, say for example, a house is built, it may be started with very basic things. You may simply put a foundation and then you build a single room. And then while being there, you may be building the other rooms, then a veranda, etc., etc. Now it becomes a full-fledged home and you can't leave it. So you have spent more time, you have spent a lot of money, you invest your time, and now you can't give it up. You are fully established in that home. So home is where you live. And similarly, the consciousness is where it lives, it associates, it's abode. Now, therefore, it is called Okasari. The vijnana at that level is called Okasari. So, it is being explained with respect to rupa, and now we can say it is with respect to feelings as well. Now, if there is a feeling, suppose there is a pleasurable feeling. At the beginning, there was no such significant feeling. Now, assume that there is a beautiful, pleasurable feeling. Now slowly you being attracted to that, you have a little desire and you start thinking about it, and slowly your mind start associating it. Now slowly consciousness start getting some kind of a establishment, and it gives some pleasure as well. The feeling is pleasurable, you are getting some sort of a delight, and that delight further helps you to associate that. It invites you to further associate because it is giving some kind of satisfaction, kind of a thrill. Now you further associate. So likewise, ultimately, the consciousness will establish in feelings. Now, similarly, you can understand when we are thinking about the perception, the same situation where at the beginning it may be a very slight image or say mental image appear in our mind. But we feel interested about it and we attach a label to it. We attach a name to it and we put a relationship to it. Oh, this is my son. Oh, this is my daughter. This is my father. This is my brother. this is my wife, this is my child. So likewise, once we are putting more and more fertilizer to it, more value to it, we attach a label to it, now it is slowly growing, and ultimately consciousness is fully entangled in that perception, or we can say simply the sign. Now it invites so many other things, and you remember all the past incidents you have gone through with him and all the experiences you had, and it may be good things, it may be bad things, so accordingly you are further thinking. So that indicates it is inviting more and more other aggregates into the picture, and now slowly start well establishing, and ultimately it started through the perceptions aggregate, and you are fully bounded, and all the necessary equipment, necessary fertilizer, necessary water, everything is there for the full growing tree, something like that. And same thing happens when we are encountering a little thought, when a little thought coming to the mind. So again, we start promoting that. We start thinking, we start further thinking and overthinking, and ultimately conceptual proliferation. Now, consciousness has enough space to live in that home. So in that sense, we can say whenever a series of thoughts are available in the mind, a full-fledged conceptual proliferation is happening in the mind. So that means a very well-established home is available for consciousness to live. On the other hand, if there are many perceptions available in the mind, many mental images are appearing, disappearing, the mind is fully occupied. All different kinds of signs are captured by the mind. That indicates also that the consciousness has a very good house to stay. On the other hand, say there are various feelings are available, and you being attached to that, you are thrilled by those feelings, and you are fully engaged with those feelings. Either it may be painful, either it may be pleasurable, doesn't matter. You are fully now disturbed by all these things. When pleasurable feelings are there, you are jumped to that, you are attached to that, you become sort of overexcited by that. And similarly, when painful feelings are there, you are being repelled by that, you want to get rid of that, all the turmoil is going on in the mind. That indicates again that the consciousness aggregate has a very good footing, a very good house available for it to live, for it to grow. And similarly, when through the eyes, through the ears, say through the nose, through the tongue, through the body, when we are encountering various sights, sounds, smells, tastes and tactile sensations, and when we are fully involved in that sensual perception, so sensual, say, objects, so enough work is available. Now we are being delighted by seeing, we are being delighted by hearing, smelling, tasting, and going through various touch sensations. And again, consciousness is finding a very good house to stay. Now, if we can understand this process, so that is what we can call okasari, where the consciousness has a very good house. Vinyanam okasari iti ucchati. Evanko gahapati okasari hoti. Now, Venerable Mahakachana is going to explain and how householder does not one roam about homeless. Now that means how one become homeless. Now sometimes people take homeless means a very, say, unfortunate situation where they don't have a home to stay. Yeah, it is true. Doesn't have a home to stay. But here it is taken from the positive sense. So rather than being shackled to one place, rather than being strict, rather than being restricted, rather than being constrained to a kind of a cell-like thing, a prison-like thing, one is getting a freedom. So assume that we all are living in a prison and we don't know. And always we are sort of thrilled by various things available in the prison, and we get married another prison mate, and now we have children, born into the prison while being in the prison, and they are also now about to get married, another prison mate. So likewise, so we are enjoying the prison. So that is very much what going to happen. Now suppose someone being able to escape from the prison, and we think that prison is the best thing, prison is the heaven, prison is the available thing. But someone who is quite wise, capable, he somehow escaped from the prison. And he is completely free now. And he doesn't want to associate the prison. From our point of view, he's a person who doesn't have a prison now. And we think, okay, having a prison is the best thing. And we need a prison. So that is the wrong perception we have. But the person who is freed, he is enjoying a completely different life, completely boundless life, completely free life. He is not bounded by anything. As a result of that, he is enjoying a lot of freedom. Now, that person, from our point of view, a homeless person. But that is what he prefers, because he understood, okay, being in a prison is a headache. Being in a prison is a kind of a pain. Being in a prison is a suffering. Now that is where Venerable Mahakachan explained the desire, lust, delight and craving, the engagement and clinging, the mental standpoints, adherences and underlying tendencies regarding the form element. These have been abandoned by the Tathagata. Cut off at the root, make like a palm stump, obliterated so that they are no more subject to future arising. Therefore, the Tathagata is called one who roams about homeless. Katancha gahapati anokasari hoti. Rupa dhatuya ko gahapati yo chando yo rago ya nandi ya tanha ye upay upadana chetaso abhithana abhinivesa anusaya tithagata sapahina ucchinnamula. Tala vattu kata, anabhavam kata. Ayating anupada dhamma, tasya tathagato anokasari iti ucchati. Now you can say, so this explanation is very much where one is capable of, even through vipassana, one can have for a short time. It is not that we need to wait till we become an arahant to experience this. At least momentary, or at least for a very limited time, one can have this kind of an experience. Now, we can say to the full-fledged level, the Tathagata, the Buddha, the Arahants are experiencing it. But if one is practicing diligently Vipassana, so there's a possibility that he may experiencing it for a short time. So the points highlighted there is yo chando, yo rago, ya nandi, ya tanha, ye upay upadana. Now these are very much into the levels of tanha. Say chando. So there's a kind of a desire. Then rago, lust, nandi. So that is the delight. So as I mentioned, delight coming through some sort of, lustful engagement. By lustful engagement, there's a delight. So that is why we prefer sort of an association. When we prefer sort of an association, it is getting some sort of a delight, and again we prefer association. It's a kind of a cycle. At the beginning, we simply think about it, and that also generates kind of a delight. And now we start physically associating. Now it also generates some sort of a delight. We further associate. It generates further delight. So likewise, now things are growing. Ya nandi. Ya tanha. That is the craving. Upaya. So that means getting closer. Upadana. That means fully attached, fully grasped. Chetaso adithana. So that means you are having kind of a mental standpoint. Abhinivesa. So your mind being adhered to that. Anusaya. And the mind is maintaining some sort of a tendency. So all these different forms are, we can say, different levels of association, different levels of attachment, or different situations of the implementation of tanha in one's mind. Say for example, say when we see a beautiful flower, so it may be a very slight association, you simply have seen it, and now you've been driven to that. Slowly you approach there and assume that you were going somewhere else, but now you saw that beautiful flower, now you turn around and you are now getting closer to that flower. So that we can say as the very much like the upaya, where you are getting closer. And now you are looking at it, and as a result of that, you get some sort of a desire and you get a little delight by seeing it so beautiful. After a long time I have seen this kind of a flower and so beautiful, and you get some sort of a happiness, little delight through that seeing, and now you have further craving to that, you want to hold it, you want to smell it, you want to pluck it, tanha, and now you have upadana, you are fully grasping it, and you are even holding the flower, and you are in the flower now, you are into the flower. So very much like your mind is fully associated with the flower now. Very much like you adhere to the flower. And one can say you are born to that flower now. And you have lost the present moment. You can't remember where you are. You are fully delighted. You are fully engaged in the flower world, we can say. Rose world. So whatever the way. So you can say now you are in a situation where your mind is fully engaged with that sort of delight, associating that particular flower. And now suppose flower, as you have given up the flower, but still you remember that association, and you have some sort of an experience through that flower, and through that experience you have prepared some sort of a view in your mind. Okay, this rose flower is the best flower. So this is the most beautiful flower I have ever seen. It's a kind of a perception now you have in your mind. And you can even grow it to a further level. Okay, this is the best. All other flowers are not that beautiful like this. So this is the best. I am the best flowerist. I am the person who owns this sort of a beautiful flower. So whatever the way, you can think in like that, and now that is the mental standpoint. Yeah, you are mentally taking a stand. Okay, I am the best flowerist. I am the person who owns this kind of a beautiful flower. Other than this flower, there is no other flower could come to this level of beauty. So what kind of a different stand that you are taking with respect to that particular flower, again that you are shackled. Again, some sort of clinging is there, grasping is there. The object is not available in front of you. That's the beautiful thing. Object is not available, but your mind is fully shackled. Your mind is fully engaged. Your mind is sort of having a mind-made standpoint, and there you being shackled. And anusaya. Anusaya means now with respect to that flower, whenever you are thinking again and again, that flower is beautiful, that is the best flower, blah blah blah, what happens is internally there's a clinging operating, internally there's a tendency operating, and a kind of a mental pattern being generated. Suppose after a year that you see another flower, so immediately that available latent tendency is triggered. Now it is again coming to the surface, and you've been driven by that. So that means latent tendency is also being strengthened because of our habitual, say, attachment to this situation. Now, so the Buddha, all these are abandoned. So you can imagine what a kind of a purified mind the Arahants may have. So Satagata we can refer here as the Buddha as well as to the Arahant. So you can say to what level the purification has happened. A complete purification is available. So many different levels of craving is abandoned. And again, it is further highlighted, pahina, that means abandoned, uchinna mula, so that means uprooted, cut off at the root, uchinna mula, tala vattukata, so that means made like a palm stump, and anabhavakata, so it's obliterated, you can't make it available right again, in the future, there is no even... A sapling could come, is completely obliterated. Anabhavakata, I think anupada dhamma. So that means no more further arising, no more future arising happens. So that is the sort of level of abandonment explained here. Now what happens is sometimes, say when you develop a little bit of meditation, you develop asubha bhavana, some sort of thing, probably the lust, the greed, these things can be abandoned for some time. But later again it is arising. Because the roots are still available. You haven't completely uprooted things. So after some time again it is developing. Again coming up. Again it's taking to the higher level. And ultimately you being overwhelmed by that desire. By that greed, that lust. So therefore, such kind of behavior is available with respect to defilements. Even though you are able to temporarily subside them, it doesn't guarantee that your mind is completely free from these defilements. At a later occasion, it can come up. Because the anusaya are available, the latent tendency is available, and your mind is not free from anusaya, the latent tendencies. So till one has latent tendencies, therefore we can say we are quite vulnerable. So you can't give any assurance with respect to the mind, because mind still have the potential to again develop that kind of a tendency, that kind of a lust, that kind of a hatred, whatever it is. Now, same thing is explained with respect to feelings, perceptions, and sankhara. So here we can say all different levels of craving are abandoned with respect to form element, feeling element, perceptions element, formations element, and again the consciousness element. In general, when we are talking about all five aggregates, but if we consider the behavior of the consciousness, then we can talk how it is associating the other four aggregates. Now, say for example, you started writing a book and you start planning it, you start properly organizing it, and again you look at it, and now you reorganize it, and now assume ultimately you thought, okay, now it is it, now you are feeling it, now you are writing it, now you are going one one chapter to the other chapter, and once you are doing that, you are thinking, you are imagining, you are sort of conceptualizing, and again now you are writing, again you are enjoying, again you are writing. Say you go to the next chapter, same thing, you design, you imagine, you write, and you conceptualize, again you write. Likewise, assume that you have completed all five chapters. Now you have the book. And while doing that task, your mind is fully involved in that task. Many, many thoughts are being generated. And you have a desire, that's why you are doing it. And you are fully associating that task. And all the concepts available in that book, all different meanings, all different statements, you are mentally proliferated, mentally evaluated, and your mind is fully engaged. And now you claim, okay, this is my treatise, this is my book. So you claim it. And you are writing your name under as the author. So I am the author. You generate a person out of that. You claim ownership. And you can even sell it to a good price, so it becomes a bestseller. And you being getting a reputation, and you become a person, a good writer, a good author, and now you earn a reputation. Now the book is not with you, but the reputation is something that you are attached to, and you have a kind of a now kind of a trend in your mind. Okay, this is the way a book should be written. Okay, this is the way a book has to be. And this is the kind of the organization a book has to be. This should be the way it has to be written. And the content has to be like this. Now you can even sort of come up with your own protocol, how to write a book. What should be the contents? And now you have a kind of a mental standpoint, okay, this should be the way. And you are now sort of promoting that, you are defending that. And others also have their own sort of things. And now you want to defend it. You are one. So you have a mental standpoint. You are adhere to that. Now the book is not available, but you adhere to the content, the presentation. So likewise, you can understand, even when you are going through mental formations, it can develop to different levels. It become, say, verbal formations. It become bodily formations, it becomes some sort of physical outcome, and you are fully involved with it, you are attached to it, and now it is grown to the form aggregate. And when you are being praised, you feel sort of happy, it's growing to the feelings aggregate. And if someone is criticizing, if someone is sort of condemning, then you feel unhappy, again you are in the feeling aggregate, and you have a lot of perception with respect to the say to that book, different perceptions, say you're imagining it, various characters available in the book, various presentations available in the book, various figures available in the book, images available in the book, all these things are you are enjoying in, while being in your mind. All different images are again and again coming in your mind, perceptions aggregate, and all the chetana, all the volitions you included, you enjoyed, you implemented, all different other thoughts that you imagine, you thought, all this comes under the formations aggregate. That is the most heavy part in this example. And you are going through a lot of thinking through the mind, and you are doing some writing through the body. And so likewise, the other aggregates are also coming to the picture. So likewise, what happened is, so different aggregates are coming to the picture. Now we are growing the aggregates. Aggregates are constantly growing. Now with respect to the Buddha, what is mentioned here is all that sort of things are abandoned. So he taught a lot of Dhamma, he didn't keep them as telling, okay, this is my Dhamma and this is the supreme, and sort of claiming them and keeping them rights reserved. So rather he simply said, monks, this Dhamma, it is like a raft. You got to use it just to cross the flood, just to cross the ocean. That's it. After that, you need to abandon it. You don't need to carry it. You don't need to hold it. It is simply a tool. So likewise, he presented his teaching. So you can say, even though the Dhamma itself, the teaching itself is some sort of sankhara, so Buddha presented it in order to remove sankhara, in order to abandon craving. So therefore, he can mention that Tathagata is called one who roams about homeless. The consciousness is just not associating any kind of aggregate. It doesn't associate form aggregate, it doesn't associate perceptions aggregate, feelings aggregate, formations aggregate. So the consciousness is homeless in that sense. That means the anokasari, not the okasari, but anokasari. katancha gahapati anokasari hoti. So one's consciousness become something which is homeless. It does not establish anywhere. It does not establish at the form aggregate. It does not establish at the feelings aggregate. It does not establish at perceptions aggregate. It does not establish at formations aggregate. So it is completely free. It is unestablished. It is homeless. So that is where Venerable Mahakachan explained to this Haliddhakani that the consciousness is now homeless. Anokasariti vuchati. Now we can go back to the verse where Okampahaya aniketasari Gami akubbang munni santhavani. So still we haven't come to the term aniketasari. We are still on to Okampahaya. So now the consciousness has abandoned the house. It doesn't have any establishment at the form aggregate or any other aggregates. Now it is fully unestablished. As a result of that, that Muni, the saint, is called Anokasari. So we'll go later to the other parts of the verse. And with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Have any new participants joining us today, feel free to participate in the Q&A by raising your hand or using your question.
Sadhu, Dante, sadhu, sadhu. Could you repeat then, so is this Anguttara Nikaya?
Yeah, this is in the Samyutta Nikaya. Samyutta Nikaya. This come in the Samyutta Nikaya, Khanda Samyutta. Khanda Samyutta. Aggregates the connected discourses in with respect to the khandas, aggregates.
Is there a number for that too?
Yeah. Khanda Samyutta Nakula Pitu Vagga Haliddhakani Sutta.
What is the number, Bhante?
Number 22.3.
22.3. Okay, so it can be found at 22.3 without the name?
Without the name at Samyutta Nikaya, yes.
Connected, could you say the...
Connected course? Discourses, Samyutta Nikaya, yeah. 22. Connected discourses, Samyutta Nikaya, Khanda Vagga, that's the aggregates, talking about the aggregates.
Khanda Vagga is the name of the sutta?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Khanda Vagga is the grouping.
Okay, and the name of the sutta is?
Haliddhakani. Haliddhakani. So Haliddhakani is the name of the person who asked the question.
Okay.
He is the householder. So the name is given with respect to his name.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. That's all my questions.
Yeah. So we can go for the questions from the audience. Yeah. Radhika, you can go ahead.
Are you able to unmute, Radhika?
Okay. Can you hear me now, Jennifer?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I had some trouble unmuting. Thank you. Teruvan Sarnai Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
Is it okay if I may I ask a question on my meditation, on walking meditation?
Okay.
So, if I do walking meditation on its own, does it lead to both samadhi and panya, or do I also have to do sitting meditation? And if so, what type of meditation and how do I do it?
Yeah, actually, it promotes samadhi. And that's what Buddha explained, that the samadhi generated through walking meditation is long-lasting. Chankamadhi samadhi chiraktitiko hoti. So that's the last benefit that Buddha explained in the Chankamana Sutta, Chankamanani Sansa Sutta, where he explains five benefits in the walking meditation. So definitely it will grow samadhi, because the samadhi generated while walking is little different. It is not the samatha kind of samadhi, rather it's an instantaneous samadhi or momentary samadhi, momentary concentration. When your foot is touching the ground, you are fully there. And when the next foot is touching the ground, you are fully there. So likewise, the object constantly changing, but the mind again and again well established at that object. So you are momentarily concentrated. So that concentration is lasting, and you are able to abandon all the different intruding thoughts, intruding sights, sounds, etc. Because you are able to focus your attention fully onto the desired object, what is the selected object. So that is the idea. So the other thing is, I mean, it does not mean that you can ignore sitting meditation. You need to involve in sitting as well. Then only you are able to take it to another level. From the walking meditation, you take to one level, and yes, you are further refining the understanding, further refining the, say, the vipassana, the practice, while in sitting. So they are actually helping each other.
How do I do the sitting meditation? Is it do I observe the sensations in my body, or do I have to do anapanasati and just stick to the area of the nostrils, or wherever I'm feeling the anapanasati?
Yeah, that depends on your practice.
If you are a beginner,
you need to start from anapanasati. So if you are, say, now you are capable of observing various sensations, you can engage with that.
Okay. So can I ask one more question?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can, I'm not sure what is exactly meant by effortless mindfulness, or when the quality of mindfulness is automatically felt on the feet. Is that samadhi, or is that still on the way to samadhi? When I'm walking, I can see that the sati is automatically on my feet. I don't have to use effort anymore. But I'm not floating where I don't feel that I'm walking anymore. I have had that experience at retreats where I feel as if I'm floating and I'm being pushed. I don't even have to walk. But what I'm feeling right now at home, where it's not a retreat, is that my sati is automatically on feet.
Mm.
So is this point where it is samadhi? And is this where I start working on uprooting the roots?
No, actually this is simply still the growing of the mindfulness, and some amount of samadhi is also there. That is why mind is not wavering, and the effortless mindfulness is typically referred to another level. What you have slowly available is what we can say as the continuous mindfulness. So previously you don't have mindfulness. As a result of that, your mind get distracted, scattered. Now you select an object so that your mind get established, and you have mindfulness. But later, now you are expanding it to daily activities. You are now being able to be mindful at various daily activities. While driving, you are mindful. While eating, you are mindful. While drinking, you are mindful. While, say, washing your dishes, you are mindful. So likewise, now slowly, mindfulness is expanding. So now we can say you have a continuous mindfulness. And later, say you develop vipassana, and now you are using mindfulness, concentration, proper investigation, all these things are happening. And later, as a result of that, the understanding happens, the insights are happening. So insights are capable of relinquishing things. Now you don't have any attachment, you don't have any grasping. And later, now mind become free, no grasping at all. And if you are able to develop that, then what is the mindfulness available is called effortless mindfulness. Yeah, you don't need any deliberate work to do in order to establish mindfulness. Rather, now mind is free. When the mind is free, that is the effortless, natural mindfulness available.
So, basically, I should continue the walking Sapman Bhavanava, and I should also have some hour also sitting meditation where I look at whatever available sensation, including the breath, if it is available. And the daily I'm doing now, not as good as I should, but I'm doing the daily task. Is there anything else that I should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, daily activities also you can be mindful.
Yes.
And they are also, I mean, if you are capable, I mean, if you have a free time, you can do the investigation there as well. All the sensations available while standing, for example. You can observe if it is not sort of disturbing the ongoing task.
Right. So now I'm having difficulty doing my repeat by myself at home, listening to this only the recorded tapes, especially the time difference between Sri Lanka and us, almost 12 hours difference, or even Australia. Is it okay if I just go to any retreat, any monastery, and do my thing there?
Yeah, no problem. I mean, most of the time. Yeah, most of the time they may be giving the same instruction and it's a matter of continuing it.
Yes, they let me do whatever. So long as I keep the silence.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Definitely.
So long as, because then I get the precepts and somebody else does the cooking.
Mm.
And get these interruptions like in the daily life of washing and all this stuff. And then I have this opportunity to develop the continuous mindfulness better.
Yeah.
Because at home, it's always, you know, living in the environment of distractions.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that if I just take any retreat I get, because that's what I have been doing.
Yeah, I mean, if you get the opportunity to practice, so that is welcome.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Okay, from here I'd like to invite next participants, the Yathala.
Hi, thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Bhante, for the talk today. Bhante, I'd just like to share some of my the way I understand about today's session, and if you could please kind of advise me on this, is that one day it was very interesting to see that, you know, like consciousness is looking for a house. I am going on that. Yeah, in the sense like I can see that is, I mean, I can relate that to myself, but when I look at it, Bhante, I can reason it more to my habits. Like example, there are some of the things I look by default or by nature. I probably may have done it long ago. I don't want to do it now, but it does happen. And when it does happen, I may get some signals, some sanya, or some, I think the other day you mentioned some sanya vipalyasa, where then it kind of, I may follow that or I may not. So I see that it's more of this habit part that is kind of, or maybe that's each other related. Somehow as a habit, I grew, I found a house. Now that house, I want to get kind of vacate, but still the habits are there. So I feel that it could be eventually the mindfulness that's going to help me. Abandoned house, is that correct?
Yeah. Actually, now physical abandonment is one thing, but mental abandonment would be the difficult thing. So physically, say you sell your house,
Yes.
and then still you are thinking about it, you are sort of imagining about it, you have still the desire about it, and sometimes you worried why I gave it, so like that. But even
Yes.
while associating a house, you can still not having any thoughts about it. That is also possible. Where the mind doesn't want to associate. Where the mind is completely free. So that is where now Buddha, on the other hand, he associated the Jetavanarama. The monks have associated the Jetavanarama. But the interesting thing is that their minds are not bewildered by that. Their minds are not engaged because of the Jetavanarama, thinking that this is beautiful, and this is made by Anathapindika, and we are the ones only gifted by this. And don't know, the monks, till they become arahants, probably they would have. But the Buddha and the arahants, so they don't have that sort of identification with respect to Jetavanarama. Jetavanarama being one of the very, very expensive monasteries. You can remember that when Anathapindika was offering that, he spent millions in that sense. But still, when the Buddha and the monks were associating, so their minds are not involved with it.
But I was like, for example, let's say, I may have put my questions a bit wrongly, but like example, I may look at a person, but then I may see the person certain marks, which I see that I don't want to see that, but it did happen as a result of my habit, or that's what I've been doing before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more that you know, I may look at this person's let's say, then I see the person, I may see the person's face, or then I may see some other parts.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realize, why did I even look at it? I didn't want to look at it. But then I realize it did happen.
Mm.
So I feel that is the kind of habit I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Our minds are
stop.
Our minds have that habituations. So different kinds of habits. So whenever we look at a person, what we are looking for? Are we looking for the eyes? Are we looking for nose? Are we looking for lips? Whatever it is. Now all these things are the desires we are basically programmed like. So certain one person may look at one thing, another person may look at one thing, another thing. So they too are interested in two things maybe. So likewise, those things are, I mean, it's kind of a script available in the mind. So according to that script, we are searching, we are exploring.
Yes. So I see the like being mindfulness or like improving the mindfulness is probably the solution.
Mm.
Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, while being mindful, you can understand what the mind is doing. What are the areas mind is looking? What are the mind being interested? So it's very much like we are understanding our own habits, our own, tendencies available in the mind. So ultimately, we are able to not being shackled by them, not being deluded by them, or not being driven by them. We can simply understand, okay, this is a habit. There is nothing special to look at. There is nothing substantial to look at. Even if I don't see it, doesn't matter. And even deeply, there is no person who is looking at. So likewise, one can develop or one can incorporate understanding, the vipassana knowledge, into the picture, so that previous tendency is abandoned. Previous tendency is not promoted.
Yes. But I can see that it's like slowly, but not always. Because most of the time, I would say, yes, I do that. I realize that, like, why did I even look at it? Yeah, but as you mentioned, I can see that I can go further and try to see the whole reasoning behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bhante, thank you so much. Thank you for the explanation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to invite you to Devi for the next question.
Thank you, Rishmajinkar. A part of it was sort of discussed just this minute with the previous question, Bhante, but you say that this all manifests in the verbal and bodily level, and I presume mental level also, is that right?
Correct.
So this is actually going back to the previous sutta where we have to guard our six sense bases, isn't that right, Bhante?
Correct, yes.
Well, because the gentleman said about mindfulness, which is also a part of that,
mm-hmm.
because if we start training ourselves at that level, seeing, hearing and so forth, if we can stop it at that level, then that is the ideal process. Is that right?
Stopping in the sense, actually, it is not that we are sort of closing our eyes or closing our ears. Rather, if the fair amount of wisdom is available in the mind, now even though we see, it is not interested of getting signs. It is not interested of getting involved. Rather, mind prefers to be alone. Mind prefers to be secluded. Mind prefers to be mindful and sort of peaceful. And it finds that the involvement is kind of a burden. Getting engaged is kind of some sort of stressful, burdensome situation. So therefore, mind prefers to be alone. Mind prefers to be not bothered. Very much like secluded. I'm living lightly, something like that.
Yes, but to get to that level, Bhante, we have to sort of sometimes actually make an effort to stop it going beyond a certain level. Isn't
definitely,
that right?
Definitely. That is why it becomes a restraint.
Yes. Yeah, because there is an effort and restraint, and then only that, after that, that leads to that. Actually, a kind of dispassion, isn't that right, Bhante?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So then the other thing is, you spoke about this Muni. So there is that the Santa Munivarya that you're talking about?
Actually, now this is referred to the Buddha and to the Arahant. So they are the most fulfilled one, completely established one, established in the sense the completely free one. So therefore, this verse is with respect to them. So, but the point is, now that is the direction that we need to develop. That is the direction we need to move. So without proper direction, without proper, say, objective, or without proper instruction, we can't develop, no? So by discussing this sutta, by, say, when householder Halidda Khani asked this question from Venerable Mahakachana, so the whole idea is, now Halidda Khani wants to come to that level. So he needs to get a direction where I need to develop. So why Buddha and the Arahants are called Anokasari, the one who is homeless? What is the deeper meaning there? So by understanding that, now he is having kind of an inner desire, kind of an urge. Okay, let me also reach that state. Let me also let me also enjoy that kind of a freedom rather than being shackled in a prison. So that is the kind of inspiration coming from the sutta. So rather than looking always to engage something and occupy the mind with something, so how about looking at another way to free the mind, completely having a mindset which is completely free?
Yes. And that Muni is the one who completely loses the sense of self, isn't that right?
Definitely.
Yes. So that is the level that the Arhats have reached. And that is, I mean, we at least can occasionally, as you said, in the meditation, and occasionally we can have experience that momentarily. Isn't that right, Bhante?
Can, yes. So that's what I mentioned. Yes. At the beginning, it may be only occasional, only momentary. But later, so one needs to slowly, develop that. To enhance it, to prolong it. So, I mean, just to give a mundane type of an example. Now, say, you are assume that you are a person who wants to become a monk. You want to become a nun. But you can't immediately get out of your house. You have a lot of, engagements. You have a lot of obligations. but still you have a desire. So what you do is assume that you are going for a retreat, just one day retreat. So you are, it's very much like you are little away from the house, little away from household activities. Now you are little, you know, you experience that. Next time you go for a 2 day, you are going for a 2 day retreat. Next time you are going for 5 day retreat. Next day you are going for a monastery and stay for about 2-3 weeks. So likewise, you are seeing whether you can do it, whether you can you can sort of cope up with such kind of an environment. So likewise, so here also the same situation. At the beginning it is difficult. At the beginning, because you are a person who are always looking for something to establish, always mind wants a place to establish. But as a result of the practice, when the mind becomes free, so it becomes kind of a vulnerable experience. You feel even frightened about it. But later, when again and again you experience that the same kind of experience through your practice, now you feel slowly comfortable there. You feel, okay, this is also a possibility. This is also a potential available in the mind. It is not always necessary to associate something and being trembled when it is being subjected to kind of impermanent, vulnerable situation. How about completely maintaining a mind free from anything, free from any association? So that is a kind of an inner wish or inner urge coming from the mind. Okay, let's do it and see. Let's jump and see. So that kind of a radical type of expectation, radical kind of a movement happening in the mind helps one to maintain that free state for a longer time.
And also coming from the previous Sutta Bhante, and I couldn't ask that question last time because my internet was not good, but when we see the impermanence more and more, then all these things also fall into place, isn't it, Bhante?
Yeah. So that's why the practice of impermanence or the understanding of impermanence is a gateway for other insights.
Yes.
So that is why, you know, with respect to the different kinds of insights, we can say the insight with respect to impermanence would be the most primordial and the beginning, and it is not restricted to the beginning. It can even expand to other levels, and it is a fully comprehensive understanding. And it may even grow into the understanding of the dukkha, can grow into the level of understanding of the non-self. So all these things are possible, yes.
It links up now with non-self as well? No?
Yes, definitely, yes. Yes.
Yes, thank you, Bhante. Thank you.
Okay.
Bhante,
yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Bhante, I remember Loku Swami Nuanse saying that the underlying tendencies are like dust under the carpet and difficult to see. So, so does that mean that I remember he saying that they come out while meditation, I'm thinking if we are doing daily activities mindfully and watching our mind, does that help to remove underlying tendencies as well?
Definitely, yes. Because when you are maintaining continuous mindfulness, because we don't know when these underlying tendencies are popping up. So when they are popping up as, say, different desires, different defilements, so if we are mindful, only we can trace them. Otherwise, they may come out and we act according to them. We being bewildered by them, we are deluded by them. That means we are promoting them. But if we are mindful, then we can step back and watch them, how they are promoting, how they are being sort of trying to tempt us. So then we are in a better shape.
Oh, okay. So it means that when we observe, if we see that they are coming, it means we recognize them, it means we are slowly removing them, right?
Yes. We are not actually slowly, the removal is by not promoting them. by not driven up by them and not getting deluded by them, but being penetrating them, we understand, okay, this is a desire. This is a kind of a tendency the mind has. This is a kind of a pattern, mental pattern trying to operate. So we are not promoting that. Rather, we simply let it go.
And Pante, during my sitting meditation and walking meditation, I watch sensations, and when I sit, I can see like a lot of sensation, like bees in beehive, like a lot of action.
Mm-hmm.
So I just watch, and then I just watch my mind, thought comes and go. So when you say be mindful and then practice insight, do I have to do anything else other than that? Do I have to just recognize thoughts and then identify them? Or I don't know if I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if you are able to recognize them, and as a result of that, if they automatically fades off, then no need to worry further. I mean, they are gone. But on the other hand, even though you recognize them, you are mindful about them, still they are available, lasting for some time. You need to maintain your mindfulness, simply look at them objectively. And as a result of that, slowly they may fade off. And if you feel that it is not going out, and it's now keep bothering me, and simple awareness is not enough, then you can use other mechanisms, like the replacement of that, or looking at something else. Say finding out the root of this bunch of thoughts. So likewise, different methods can be applied.
Yeah, sometimes Bhante, when I try to do that, the mind get I feel tired, you know. Sometimes when you try to find the root cause and something like that, it sometimes feel like overwhelming.
Yes. I mean, that's why, I mean, you don't need to really engage with kind of a striving at this level. Rather, better maintain a very relaxed observation. Yeah, you look at them like they are coming, and they are you simply able to disengage, and you simply watch, not being able to extract some energy from you. They will fade away naturally, because they need some kind of a strength deriving from us for their sustenance. But right now we are not promoting them, we are not giving that strength. As a result of that, they naturally fade off.
Yeah, sometimes they really, really struggle to come out, and sometimes they win, and I lose. And then if you become really, really mindful, then they fade away. But it is a constant struggle.
Yeah. Could be.
So I was wondering whether, you know, the wisdom is developing very slowly. I think I have a lot of underlying tendencies.
Everyone in the same boat. I mean, it is not that only you. Everyone is in the same boat, because we can't say that we are exceptionally quick in our practice. Rather, these things are happening very slowly. And that is how Buddha also has given the similes. So the fading off of the defilements are very, very slow. We have to have a lot of patience to continue the path.
Yeah, so the things that faded away, like ill will and things, they faded away pretty quickly after I start practice. But I have mentioned that before to you too, some sort of fear inside me, I think it's from other lives. So they started coming out when the mind became clear and clear. They started coming out, you know, tiny, tiny things.
Correct.
I've been helping one of my friends who had mental illness. And, you know, at one point I couldn't help her anymore. Because I became very sensitive. And I thought it should go the other way. I should not be sensitive to those. But I started seeing these things very clearly, like tiny, tiny feelings.
Correct.
and then I became very sensitive.
Yeah. No, actually, that sensitivity you can't avoid, and it needs to have. So now, when one becomes more and more, developed in vipassana, so when the mind is maintained in an unassociated, unattached state, so your mind definitely becomes more sensitive. But the important thing is, so the sensitivity is not the only thing available, wisdom is also available. So wisdom helps you to maintain your stability without getting emotionally sort of hijacked, emotionally being attacked. So sensitivity definitely will have. So that is why you are more conscious, you are more sensitive. More than the others, you quickly get some sort of an understanding. Okay, this is going to happen, this is what's happening. So likewise, you become fully emotionally literate in that sense. But on the other hand, there's a kind of a buffer available in you. So that is the insight practice. So the insights are helping you to maintain some as a kind of a shock absorber. Yeah, you are not emotionally driven. So this sensitivity does not grow to the level that you feel overwhelmed by the emotions. Rather, you are able to, capture them. You are able to sort of inhibit them without fully you being overwhelmed by them. So that's why, we need to have compassion and wisdom well balanced. So actually, we can't do it immediately. We sometimes jump to the one extreme of wisdom and we neglect the compassion part. And we sometimes become over-compassionate and then we lose the wisdom part. So the person, that Buddha, is the one only perfect in both, where the wisdom and compassion are well balanced. So when we are continuing our path, it is up to us to daily adjust this. Depending on different activities, we need to daily adjust how to balance compassion and how to balance wisdom.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time balancing it yet, but I know I'm going in the right direction.
Yes, yes.
I think it's depend on the personal characters, I believe so, because some people are more sensitive than the others.
Yeah, could be. That's also there.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much, Bhante.
Yes, yes.
Much merit. Yeah. Dervan Sarnai.
Dervan Sarnai.
Can you hear me, Bhante?
Yes, yes.
I'd just like to make a comment. I can't really see too much of a difference between, say, even a city house or a forest kuti. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you are in the monastery, like you've got a family there. You've got elders, you've got young monks.
Exactly.
You've got a mother who will serve you dana. So this sensuality is what's going on within you. Right? So not necessarily the place or where you're not exactly wandering, like homelessness. What does that really mean? This body is your home that you create, right? So what are you seeing? So can you go into homelessness in that aspect a little bit?
So that's why, it depends on the different characteristics of a person. So there are people who are capable of living a household life and still maintain a very good practice and still maintain kind of a homeless life, even though they have a lot of luxuries, all the facilities, but they are not attached to them. So I know that there are many people doing like that. So they are household, maintaining a household life, but they are very unattached. Even though they have luxurious things, they are not attached to them. And yeah, they are living a very simple life. Even though they have the capacity to buy so many luxurious things, they don't want. They are simply maintaining the very essential and maintaining a very simple life. And they are like monks living a household life. But on the other hand, there are certain monks, so they don't practice, they don't sort of maintain a good meditation practice. So they associate so many things. They are a lot of have a lot of positions. So that is also, we can say, it is not really guaranteed there. So it depends on the persons. And on the other hand, there are other monks who only have very basic things, and they are continuing their practice, and always helping, and all the other things are also teaching, and all things, other things are also there. So it depends on the persons. Therefore, we can't have a kind of a rule. Okay, this is the only place, this is not possible, and etc., etc. So the person, it depends on the person as well. A fair amount of skill is attributed to the person. A person who is capable of doing the thing while being in a household life, he can do it. If he found it is difficult and he can try the monk's life, a monastic life, a kind of a retreat life, and he can check the value of it, the benefit of that. So likewise, it's a kind of a trial and error method in a way, that how to find out the best context, or how to find out the best conducive environment for our practice. So time to time, I'm being engaged with some activities, and again releasing them and maintaining kind of a relaxed atmosphere, and you are on yourself and sort of secluded. So likewise, you can maintain a kind of a balance.
So how much you're really attached to external or even internal phenomena, right?
Yeah, yeah. Correct.
Okay, thanks, Malbe.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I'll turn back to Dini for the next question.
I was not even going to ask this question, but since the discussion was going in a certain direction, I wanted to get your advice.
Right.
I've been, trying to be mindful and all that, but this sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I wake up with the thought of something that has happened way in the past, and I'm startled by it,
mm-hmm.
that I have thought of it even.
Right.
So when I feel a little bit ashamed that I should have put that out of my head and my thoughts and everything,
mm-hmm.
how do I deal with it?
No, that's why, that's the beauty.
Thing
is, that is the beauty of the practice. These things are underneath. So these are the underlying tendencies. So we never know what is available under the carpet. So we haven't exposed to that. We haven't opened the carpet and saw it. So there are situations when the mind is very relaxed. Immediately that dust may come out. Immediately that long-hauled stuff, desires, tendencies can come out. Then it's a matter of simply flushing them out. So we don't need to worry thinking that, okay, what a shame that these things are still available. You can be a little ashamed, that is also helpful. But on the other hand, we don't need to criticize ourselves thinking of having them, but they are the ones that we were growing many, many lifetimes. Now, as a result of the practice, now we have an opportunity to look at them objectively, not being involved with them, not being driven by them, not getting deluded by them. So that is the best advantage we have. Otherwise, we are helpless. We are simply promoting them. So therefore, we can be happy. Oh, my goodness, another one is there. So let me look at it, let it go. Another one is here. Okay, let me look at it, or let it go. So likewise, we can simply empty the pot.
Vante, why does it happen I'm just getting up with that thought.
Yes, yeah, that's the thing. So when you are having a good nap, good sleep, uh-huh. that is a very good time for the mind to rest.
Oh, I see. That's what you meant.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah. So now when the mind is at a good rest, now that is the time another layer of your, impediments or segmentations, can come out.
I see. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very glad you explained that to me. I was wondering how I could have woken up from a you know, being asleep with a thought like this, I was really upset. It happened this morning, actually.
Very interesting, by the way, isn't it? I mean, we are simply having a good sleep, and when we wake up, okay, a kind of a defilement is available. Okay, simply look at it. Okay, let it go. Goodbye. Ta-ta.
Oh, I see. Thank you. Much
yeah.
credit to you, Bhante.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think there are no more questions. And one announcement I have to make. So I couldn't do the last Saturday Clarity of Mind session. So that is being scheduled on next Saturday morning from 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time. And that is on Friday U.S. time. So I hope you know that information. The Clarity of Mind through Mindfulness. That session will be available on next Saturday, 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time. So then we'll conclude today's Dhamma discussion or the Sutta teaching session. All the merits we accumulated, let's wish, help us also to be helpful in attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll share the merits with everyone. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasatta chabummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanang. Akasatta chabummatta devanaga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.